Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, the beginning of what will probably be an extended series of Dialogues for Peace and Reconstruction, trying to understand the underlying dynamics that have led to the various conflicts at the local stations, WBAI amongst them, and at the Foundation and Pacifica Board. It has required nearly 6 months on my part to investigate the various charges and allegations and to see what I could make. I'm still not complete in my own full understanding of all the issues. There are still individuals I still have not interviewed in the process of doing that now. But I feel that I have enough information at hand that I can take it to another level. That level I'm trying to reach is beginning the healing process. My own personal opinions on what I've observed, understood, and investigated and concluded are really irrelevant and are not what is going to be shared. Instead, keeping myself neutral, having no specific allegiance, having virtually no friends at the station, and I don't say that in a negative way at all, meaning I have not socialized or befriended people on a social level, so I have no axe to grind nor any favors to be beholding to. So my only concern is this. How can we make the station better? How can we have it survive longer? How can we have all of its members and diverse groups' interests represented? How can we provide reasonable, professional, and responsible and objective voices for all those who are underserved and who do not have a voice? And this requires time, patience, and a commitment by many different people. I believe that there is a need for lots of diversity, that we shouldn't have just one mindset. I believe that we can do all this and at the same time respect the original founder's proclamations. This is what he wanted to do. This is how he started, why he started, and where are we at today? I have just one partial advantage. That advantage is I've been at the station a long time. Therefore, I've seen the highs and lows. I have chosen in the past not to take these issues onto the air because I felt that it would have been more harmful than beneficial. This is, from my point of view, this is not the worst the station's ever been in. I can promise you I've seen worse. But it is not a good time now. And I'm going to try to, the best I can at least, bring disparate voices together. I believe that radio, WBAI Pacifica in particular, is about communication. We're in the communication business. And you communicate by dialoguing. Dialoguing where you take the most responsible, objective, and constructive voices and provide a forum for them so they can share their interest and their passions and their solutions. That's crucial. I don't believe that the solutions resolve on one side or the other. I believe that I have, from my own experience, speaking with responsible people such as Dan Coakland, who was a former news director of Pacifica until he resigned, and speaking with Juan Gonzalez, as I have, and Tomas Morin, one of the board members, and Rob Robinson and Rabbi Aaron Kriegel. These are responsible people, Bernard White and Susan Wang. I invited Valerie Van Isler. In fact, I spoke with Valerie and asked her would she like to communicate. And unfortunately, at this time, she has declined. Hopefully, she will open that up again. Al Lewis, a very conscientious person who has spent, quite frankly, the better part of his life fighting for social justice, not being fearless, being not being fearful of the consequences of taking positions. Even back during McCarthyism, he was standing up for freedoms that very few people were doing so. He is a responsible voice. So I'm reaching out to everyone I know and offering them an opportunity to come on this program to share their points of view, as I am also those people who have been under attack. And I have taken the time and the effort to investigate many of the allegations, in fact, all the allegations I can, and about these attacks. And I can promise you, my investigation shows that in some cases, the charges leveled against people are simply inaccurate. They'll have an opportunity to present that information. I have sought only that which can be independently confirmed. And a little background. Pacifica's mission is not that of a normal commercial radio station. The foundation is meant to provide a form and voice for the voiceless, to provide a means of people who are in minority positions to have representation of their ideals and ideas brought forward. There are five stations. There are the station in Houston, Dallas, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and New York City. These are not community licensed stations. The license is held by a foundation, the Pacific Foundation. The foundation has a board, that board coming from backgrounds of different persuasions, has a commitment as a nonprofit entity. Its motion is not to make a profit. Its motion is to move these voices forward. Has at various times been ineffectual. I mean, there were times when the board was not doing its mission, plain and simple, and I don't think anyone would argue with that issue. There were times when the electricity was turned out at WBAI. I was there. There were times when the phones were turned off. I was there. There were times when we had virtually no equipment. In fact, we had 200 producers and didn't even have a single tape recorder to go out into the field. I brought my own tape recorders, my own DAP machines down and loaned them to the producers. I gave them to one. I gave some to Samori Marksman, Rosemary Reed, and Rick Harris, because they didn't have the resources. And what generally was there frequently ended up getting either broken or stolen. So there was a time when you look for the leadership from the Pacific Foundation and its board to intercede, to bring quality management in, and that quality management to bring systems and some professional oversight into a station that had fallen into small cliques, power cliques, that did not truly represent either the mission of BAI or to its local community board. And these powerful cliques didn't want to be budged. And many a times these people had the mindset of entitlement, that if they were on the air, they should be there for life. Well, as my brother Stephen pointed out in a discussion, and he is sitting with me in the studio today, and he has been a political activist his entire career, and also a researcher. In fact, if you look at all of the books that I wrote, it was with my brother and dozens of years spent helping. In fact, right now he's helping with trying to bring medical supplies and important life-saving devices to different countries. He's done so in Dominican Republic, and he was also responsible for getting India, along with a group of activists, to get the lead out of the gasoline. He's doing the same thing now in Dominican Republic. Well, he's been also helping in the investigation. And he said, you know, the problem with everyone is, this is not the Supreme Court. When you're nominated to the Pacifica board, it's not for life. You know, these are not life entitlements. And the same thing being on the radio. The fact you're on the radio doesn't mean that it's yours. You can't die and will your show to your next of kin. These are fluid and dynamic programs. The nature of programming is that it can change and infrequently should change to represent the greater needs of the different communities. And that's been part of the problem. Part of the problem is that people come on the air and think this is for me and this is what I'm going to do. And then we have to ask, well, who does it benefit? Does it really benefit everyone? And are there other people who could do the same job and do it better? Have we, as a non-commercial broadcasting group of stations, have we sought out the best of any given type of voice to represent those individual interests, no matter what it is? And you and I all know that there are some wonderful voices and there are some less than wonderful voices on non-commercial radio. The trouble is, what happens if you need to replace someone, whether it's a station manager or an on-air person? You end up going into a civil war. It has never been easy to remove anyone from any position in the background of BAI. I'll give you one little example. I was sitting with a program director about 15 years ago, who there was a person who was a really terrible anti-Semite on the air. Many of our listeners will know, because I even had a group of rabbis meet with me to talk about how they were having trouble supporting, and they were all liberal, supporting WBAI at the time, because, and they weren't pledging. They would listen to my show, but they wouldn't listen to anything else because there was a lot of hate radio on at that time, unfortunately. And I went to the program to ask him, you know, does freedom of speech mean the freedom to say anything irrespective of how responsible or wrong it is? And he said, well, that's the problem. He said, you can't take someone off the air. He said, we've tried. It hasn't worked. And when he suggested this one person, that if they were going to be anti-Semitic and racist against all Jews, they weren't just anti-Zionistic, they were just very rampantly anti-Semitic, invite the other people on to give a chance to give their point of view. With that, the guy went ballistic, picked up a chair, and hit the program director, physically assaulted him. I'm sitting right there. I'm an eyewitness to this. And left. The guy was not fired. No charges were brought. Unfortunately, it was just the way things were done. So we have to ask ourselves, should we raise our standards on all levels? On conduct, objectivity, professionalism, and still be able to maintain the ideals for which this entire foundation was founded? Or should we be some people professional, others not, some responsible and others not, some wanting oversight and others being responsible when oversight is offered, and some people not wanting any oversight? Like, don't tell me what to do. I don't want to hear what you have to say, and if you do tell me, I'm going to get up in your face about it. These are many of the issues that we have to deal with in radio. We cannot compare ourselves with commercial radio, because in commercial radio, firing is done every day. I worked at WMCA, and 56 people were fired in 1 year. I also have come from that background of being on commercial radio as long as I've been on non-commercial radio, actually longer. And it's not about freedom of speech either. I have never once in my entire career been censored on commercial radio. There's never been a single issue I was not allowed to talk about. And sometimes I hear people saying it's only on non-commercial radio you can hear that. That has simply not been my experience. In fact, I know for a fact that special interest groups went out of their way to try to have me fired on ABC repeatedly. But the station program director, Mark Mason, to his credit, never once allowed that. And yet, even though I was the number one person in ratings on ABC, I beat Bob Grant, who I do not share his views at all. And I was the one liberal person on that station who had a voice, and on Sunday evenings my ratings were so high, I was number one in the entire United States. There was not a single radio station that had higher ratings or brought in more money for the time slot per those hours and was paid less. I'll tell you exactly what I was paid. I was paid $154.44 a week by ABC Network. And I brought them in a fortune. In ratings, I was the only show to ever win awards. And yet, after all those years, John Minnelli came in sat down with me one single time and told me I was history. I said, okay. Yeah, you know, I have to accept that I may not like to leave, but if I'm given no choice, that's it. I was told that I had to leave WMCA, not because of anything I had done, highest ratings, best audience, lowest pay. So they had it all the way on their way. But the day that I was told, you have 2 hours to get out. And they had a security guard there to make sure I got out. All because, as it later turned out, Carlton Fredericks wanted my time and worked behind my back on the very day I did a four-hour tribute to that man. In his honor, he was taking my job. People don't know all about that. They don't know about the schemes of broadcasting. It can be a very ruthless environment. But again, I said, okay, my life doesn't stop with getting off the air. It goes forward. My life is more significant than a broadcast or radio program. So if you understand the very nature of broadcasting is there's going to be turnover, hirings and firings, and standards set, and at some point we're all accountable to someone else. And non-commercial radio also has to have accountability. And the question is the strength, objectivity, balance, and fairness of that accountability system. Checks and balances. So management is not arbitrary and capricious, and the staff are not defiant purely for the sake of creating any form of self-serving chaos. And hence the need for balance and fairness. And I believe that's what all of us are looking for. Balance and fairness. There is nothing more frustrating than to hear someone talk about you when you're no longer on the air and say things that are either cruel or simply untrue. Then you feel this enormous sense of frustration. They have a form and you do not. So therefore you use the forms you have. Phones, faxes, emails, or you simply say it's just not significant. BAI is more important than any person, manager or on air or producer or technician. Pacifica is more important than any foundation member. And I'm asking for us now to start to engage in a constructive dialogue to understand that we must put together a program that takes us forward, and forward without attacks, forward without denunciations, forward without taking things out of context that can only be hurtful. In fact, in one of the allegations made, after I did an in-depth investigation, I found that that particular allegation was something that was said in a context that was meant to be constructive, and later, just like in a divorce, people look for anything that was said or done and look at how they can change the context. We have to get beyond taking things out of context. We have to look at achieving the foundation's goals, taking the mission to the highest level of quality and integrity. That's the purpose of this series, and it will be a series. Right now, I am planning that every Monday, for the foreseeable future, to have a forum, a platform for people who are both on the air and off the air. People from all sides. People who are the dissenting board members. For instance, next Monday, I intend to have on here, and he's agreed, Tomas Moron, board member, but I'll also have on another board member. So you hear different points of view. And for those who've heard only one side, that all these board members are corporate sellouts. They're lackeys for the multinational interest. They're only here to subvert the station, to sell it off. And then they'll have a chance to respond. They will have an opportunity to put it in perspective. They've had no voice. You've not heard any board member who's been attacked. And one in particular, I took months investigating the background of one board member who was being attacked, pickets at the person's home and business. Her computer files were hacked into, her private and confidential and proprietary lists of clients. And she's a small little business person. She's a minority business person. And they went to great lengths to try to, in effect, blackmail and extort her into resigning. I could find no evidence that she had in any way done anything to compromise her position in any way. The fact that she may have held a more progressive view should not have been grounds for the type of assault that has occurred. She will have a forum, and there should not be room in this dialogue for the radical fringes. I can promise you they will not be given a forum on my show. I have experienced myself, there have been people who have been threatened with death threats, extortions, blackmail. These are people who don't have a life. And you know something? They would love this conflict never to end. Because then for the first time since the Vietnam War or some other thing, they have a purpose. They don't want healing. They thrive off chaos. These are chaos feeders. Do they represent the majority of voices? No. Most people within the different camps are responsible, caring, sincere, and truly impassioned people. The fact that they have different views is what we're going to try to understand. But please understand that those people who are trying to do the dirty work and have succeeded, they are not the voices of the proponents or opponents. I have yet to find any of the people who I've interviewed, from Al Lewis, who is an extraordinarily responsible human being, to Ken Ford, a board member too, who I also consider a responsible person. These are not people who want to hurt anyone or destroy anything, but they share different points of view. It's time that we heard their views in an open forum. Juan Gonzalez is coming on. I have many people coming on who will represent different platforms. And my guidelines are this. A, I allow no personal attacks. There will not be a second warning on that. In the history of my show, it has never been a forum for personal attacks. Secondly, let's keep it constructive and positive. It's perfectly acceptable to lay out what you feel the problems are in order to show your solution to those problems. Thirdly, what can help in the healing process? Now, here's the tricky part. In the end, this is not just going to be about, let's say, functional solutions. It's also going to have to be about political solutions. Because what if, for example, one person comes from a communist point of view? And I interviewed a communist, a very intelligent and, again, very sincere person who's worked at the station. And that person has seen it, been there, and was one of my independent confirmers of things I needed to know. I needed this for my background. You see, for the past 6 months, I've been doing all my homework not to do an expose. I wouldn't do that. That would be irresponsible. But rather, when I am providing a healing forum, at least I have the background to know when someone is telling the truth or not. Because I've already done the research. I know where the facts are. In fact, some of the people, dissidents I was talking with, were surprised at things they thought were absolute right on. And when I shared information, it made them stop and think. Well, maybe they have some so-called facts that are not facts. And so I'm asking them to re-examine some of their points of view based upon information I will share with them and with the evidence. And then if they say just one example, and I'll give just one example only, what I'm talking about, I've been able to independently confirm and have absolute evidence that in the interview where Utrice Lead went into the studio when Major Owens, the congressperson, was on the air, he was not disconnected. He hung up. Now, if that's part of the argument about how, you know, he was censored, and that simply is not the case. And so I've taken an enormous amount of time to get facts. And that's why I've asked repeatedly, please stay neutral. Stay neutral and open until you hear all sides. And my job is, because I'm not beholden to anybody, and anyone will tell you, and anyone who's listened to my program knows, I can't be bought, sold, or had. That's, you know, I've never done an endorsement, never done a... you know who I am, and you know why I do what I do. But I simply will listen to what someone has to say. I will respect what they have to say. I'll write it down. I take notes. And then I try to see if it's true. Can I verify? Can I prove it? How many times have you heard me say, the first rule in science is disprove yourself. The second rule is see if someone else can disprove your point of view. And if you can disprove yourself or someone else can, then you didn't have anything other than a good hypothesis, but not a fact. And if nobody can disprove you and you can't disprove you, then you have the basis possibly of something you can be sustained for. And a lot of the arguments simply are not sustainable. So that's why I want to give you his background to this. I'm just giving you the background to set the stage that you're going to hear dozens of people on the air from all points of view in a positive, constructive forum to show you what we have to do to stop all this civil war, the hatred, the counterproductive antagonism. Look at Northern Ireland. Look at Israel. Look all over the world. You have conflict. The first step in conflict is to open up a dialogue. The second, once you realize what the issues are, at some point someone has to extend an olive leaf. Someone has to give something up, and so you can start blending things together to have something that will go forward. If you have one person that says, we've got to have total local control, this is about localism, and someone else says, no, it's about national control, and someone says, we want to elect locally, who's going to go on the radio, and someone else says, yeah, but what if you just have the radical element that does the electing, who are the most voracious, then you're just going to have radical voices on. Then someone else says, but you need to have it where it's all done by a single program director, then who elects program director? These are all the issues we're going to be exploring. And maybe at the end of this process, or somewhere along the way, we'll be able to better understand how we might individually participate in this. My regular listeners, expecting health topics listening today, realize that these topics are important for now and for the future, and I will be continuing with this, but this is a forum that allows us to exist. And I might mention that on at least 17 occasions, they have made efforts in the past to remove me from the station. The trouble is, it was not the program director, and if the program director told me to leave, I would have to respect that. And I would find another voice or another forum, hopefully somewhere. These were small cliques, power cliques inside the station, who didn't like my audience, meaning you, didn't like me, for whatever the reasons. They would never dialogue with me. I've always extended an open policy, talk with people. So I have also been in the same situation as many of the people who've been removed from the air. I've been removed from the air. I've been removed from WOR, ABC, WMCA, and long ago, if it were up to the little power clicks over the years and years in the station, my air check tapes at one time were cut, destroyed. My mail, which is my private mail, was open and human feces put in it. Every single letter. Thousands of letters were thrown away. That's a federal offense. And yet, these people would do this, and they got away with it. And people at the station knew who was doing this. They would take my signal. How many times have you heard the show before Mind Perfect, the show after Mind Perfect, and Mind hazy and staticky? And I later found out that people were changing the frequency. But I never brought all this up. I would take it to the appropriate people and offer them the information and hope that they would try to find a solution, understanding the political environment in which this was coming. I would like to see a station that is professionally managed, objective in its reporting, and programs that represent the true interest of a wide variety of the audience who are underserved. So that gives you enough about what this is about. This is an extended program today. We're going to be taking a lot of time. Our program is going over our normal. I won't be going through this every week. I'll just be going right to the individuals and giving them the forum. And so now let's go to our first person. Our first person on today's program is Bernard White. Bernard White is well known because he was the co-host of Wake Up, the morning show. He was also the program director. And he is here to share his information with us. Nice to have you with us today, Bernard.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Gary.
Bernard, I always invite anyone who I'm having on a program to challenge or take issue with any of the points I've raised up to this point and in my prologue to today's discussion, so I give you that opportunity now.
Well, there's one thing that sticks out, and that's the information about Major Owens. I think that although Major Owens might have been the one who actually hung up, I think that the situation that he found himself in was one that he was talking to no one, that the program was interrupted. And after repeatedly saying, hello, 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 is anybody there, he wound up hanging up. But I think what's key is that the program was disrupted and that it was taken over, and the host was dismissed, and another program was put in its place by the interim station manager.
Okay, that, and again, I wasn't looking at the context in which it was done. I was merely looking at the specific fact, and the rest of that will be dialogued out with the people who were on. I'm inviting him on the air as well. Okay. And by the way, I'm inviting Major Owens on as well. Bernard, let's begin by taking a look at what you see the problems to be, and let's start with what you see the problems. I want to go from the problems to the solutions at WBAI.
Well, I think the problem initiated outside of WBAI in that when there was a decision made by the national board that they would sever the relationship with the local advisory boards. This came out of the Pat Scott regime, when Pat Scott was the national executive director. And she convinced the board that they had to sever that relationship, that anyone who was a member of the local advisory board could not be on the national board. At the same time, running concurrent with that, there were discussions that were taking place to sell two of the radio stations, KPFA in Berkeley, as well as WBAI in New York. And this seemed to be an act that was a precursor to moving forward to the sale of these radio stations. As a matter of fact, there was an email that was sent incorrectly to a media group from Michael Palmer going to who was then the chair of the board, Mary Frances Baring, and it talked openly about an obvious discussion that an ongoing discussion that was being held about the sale of KPFA and WBAI. Michael Palmer stated that WBAI would probably be the most likely one to be sold because there were divisions amongst the staff, and that it would be very easy to take over a WBAI. So once this decision was made that they would sever the relationship between the local advisory board and the national board, what happened was that the information which was flowing from the bottom, which would be the local advisory board, up through the national board, impacting on decision-making, that was taken out. So the only decision-making that was taking place at the top without any real input from the bottom. And you had people on the national board who are not familiar with community radio. Most of them don't have that as part of their work, their legacy of work. They have more in mind a corporate model, which is a top-down model, and that's the way that they've been behaving. So it would stand the reason that they would see nothing wrong with just reaching into a WBAI, snatching out a station manager in violation of the bylaws, in violation of the rules, which clearly state that in order to remove a station manager, it must be done in consultation with the local advisory board. This did not happen, as well as with the staff. So those things did not happen, but this is the kind of heavy-handedness that we've been seeing since these folks came onto the national board. Since December 22nd, we can see that this heavy-handedness has really been visited at WBAI. 21 people have been fired, banned, or removed from the air. 21 people who did not like what was going on, who spoke out against it, who some of whom didn't even get an opportunity to speak out against it. Me, Sharan Harper, who is the producer of Wake Up Call, were fired early in the morning, following the midnight coup that we call it, because that's what it was.
Why do you feel that you were fired?
I feel that I was fired for several reasons. One is because there was a dislike between the two major people who were involved in the coup of December 22nd. One is Bessie Wash, and the other is the interim station manager at WBAI right now, Utrice Lee. I believe that there was a feeling that I may not go along with the corporatization of WBAI, and there are you'll see through your interviews that there's much evidence that that was in fact in motion. And they know that if I was there, that I would not stand for what's going on. Since, this takeover, the radio station has just lost, hundreds, if not thousands of listeners, people who just cannot listen anymore. They're tired of the personal attacks that happen on a daily basis. I'm attacked, or the program that I was a part of was attacked on an absolute daily basis. And some of them are very, very, very vicious attacks.
Who has attacked you?
The morning show that's in place right now. The Paul DiRienzo has a special place in the legacy of attack. He has just been extremely vicious in his attacks. Lie after lie after lie. Every program that he has, he just tells these lies. He even told a lie about the invasion of WBAI, how he was attacked by someone that was there. And we all know that this was not the case, that he was not stopping a marauding horde. An individual came up to the radio station long after the event took place, and he was attacked by Paul DiRienzo. You know, there are others that have joined in the attack. Clayton Riley has joined in the attack. You know, Bob Hennelly has joined in on the attack. These people have, rather than, you know, since they're there and they have the time to do a show, why don't they just do a show and let the people see? The people can tell. We have very, very intelligent listeners. And if they hear something that they want, then they will support it. But this is insupportable, and rather than recognize that they can't fix what it is they're doing because they really don't know how to, they wind up just attacking the individuals who are gone and don't have the ability to defend themselves.
All right. Now, Bernard, that would be frustrating for anyone. They hear themselves being maligned or attacked. I've had that happen. We've all had that happen who are on or off the air. The question is this. Do you think that there was anything that you did leading up to the changeover that may have precipitated this? In other words, on your own show, did you say anything that would have caused a reaction?
Well, I would imagine that we had several teach-ins prior to this, one in which the now interim station manager participated in. We even had a teach-in that was planned on that Saturday morning. And the teach-in was going to be where we would bring in people from the media who had experience in the media, media experts, who would begin to talk about various media issues, of which Pacifica and WBAI was going to be a part. And I think that one of the reasons why there was a move that Friday, in addition to there just not being anybody around because of the Christmas Kwanzaa holidays, that there was some fear that if we did go to the air with this information, that it would be devastating in the sense that it would let people know clearly just what was going on with WBAI, and that we were a part of what's taking place in media, where the whole corporatization of media. So I think that might have precipitated this move against.
Was there a email sent out the day before by one of the supporters of this effort to suggest taking over the studios and actually having the names of individuals who would take over different people's offices?
Well, not as far as I know. You know, there.
I have that email.
Okay, but what has happened? You know, you mentioned that email, and you probably could mention a lot more. In any struggle, there are people who are on the extremes. There are people who, some of whom I've just mentioned at WBAI, who are on the extreme. There are people who, out in the public, are on the extreme. We're talking about possibly a million people who listen to Pacifica. And out of that million people, yes, there are going to be some people who will be on the extreme, but they don't represent the soul and the engine of the movement and the mindset of the movement. Now, what had happened at WBAI is that we had several meetings, several staff meetings. One meeting, there was over 70 staff members. At another meeting, there was about 30, 35 staff members. And it was about 98% at each meeting decided that we had to do something as a staff to stop this illegal move by Pacifica, a move that was threatening to destroy our autonomy.
Okay, now the move you're talking about, so we put this in historical perspective. The move was to replace the station manager, Valerie Ann Issler.
Right.
Okay. Had you or other people recommended that Valerie be removed in the past?
Okay, let me finish my story first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. That at this these meetings, we had an overwhelming majority, as I said, about 98% of the staff at each meeting, said that we needed to do something to stop this. So the staff broke into committees. The staff broke into committees, and they began to prepare to have teach-ins at the station on an ongoing basis as a way of, and all peaceful, I might add, that to say that they did not like what was about to take place. Now, to your question about whether or not I had... or whether was it about me or was it about the staff?
You or and the staff at various times recommending that Valerie Van Isser be removed.
Okay. What had happened with that is that there were times when we had serious conflict with the station manager. But as long as it stayed in-house, it was an in-house move. I had never been a part of any group or any memo or email or anything that went outside of the BAI circle to ask to remove the station manager. We all have jobs, and I'm sure that I've worked on many jobs where I thought that the one who was considered to be the boss was just out of his or her mind. But that didn't mean that I would organize staff to try and take over the business.
Now, just I'm asking for a little broader answer on this, Bernard. Could you see that by Bessie Walsh wanting to replace Valerie Van Isler as the station manager, for whatever reason she chose, that may not have had anything to do with corporatizing or taking over BAI for any other reason. Have you examined that as a possibility that by circling the wagons around Valerie, this could have launched an entire challenge that it was action, reaction, action, reaction? Is
yes,
that possible?
I have looked into that. And what I saw was that in December 22nd, as of the date that I was terminated, that WBAI has experienced unprecedented success. As a matter of fact, in the fall meeting of the National Board, it was Bessie Wash who praised Valerie Van Isler for taking us out of a $200,000 deficit, and who, out of her own mouth, said that we had a $70,000 surplus. So I think
that was Valerie, or I'm sorry, I didn't understand which one. Valerie or Bessie said that?
Bessie said that.
Bessie said that they had a $70,000 surplus
at a fall national board meeting. In fact, Valerie,
fall that year, fall
of 2000
fall. Right?
As a matter of fact, they even gave her a, from what I understand, a standing ovation. Oh, well, they applauded her, eradicating this deficit. We had the highest listenership that we've ever had. We had over 200,000 listeners, and this is using Arbitron, which is the industry-wide measuring tool that historically under-measures the people who listen to Pacifica Radio. So based on all of the objective criteria that they use to measure, BAI was doing very well. So the only reason that I could see for Bessie Wash moving in at that time was to satisfy some other desire, some other goal, which was outside of really straightening out the radio station.
Did you speak with Bessie Walsh during this period of time?
I made several calls to Bessie Walsh. And see, this is where, you know, she came on the air and said that she had been in town for weeks and that nobody had called her. Well, I have proof. I spoke directly to Andrea Sisco, who's a national board member. I got a number from Andrea Sisco to call Bessie Wash. I called Bessie Wash at least five times before I said, hey, Bernard, wait a minute. What are you doing here? You're calling the people and she's not getting back to you, so I stopped calling her. She came into town and said that she was in town for a week and no one ever called her. That was untrue. She never returned the phone calls.
Okay, so you didn't meet with her. You didn't dialogue with her?
I dialogued with her early on, when Valerie Van Isler first got the letter. Matthew Finch and I met with her at her choice at the New York Hilton Hotel in the restaurant on the first floor, and we talked about this her letter saying that she was going to remove Valerie Van Isler. I told her at that time, if you do that, first of all, you'll be taking away the autonomy of WBAI. The local radio stations must have autonomy. They must be able to design a radio station that best fits their particular locale, number one. Secondly, I told her that if you do this, that it would put into motion a firestorm that would not benefit Pacifica, that you would have the same kind of activities happening here that were precipitated in Berkeley when there was an attempt to take over the Berkeley radio station. And she told me that she was going to do this anyway.
Explain to the people what happened at Berkeley for a historical perspective on KPFA, because not everyone in this audience may appreciate the 28-day?
23-day
lockout there. Just give them a little background on that from your perspective.
Well, what happened in Berkeley is that Pacifica, in a very heavy-handed way, went in and began to fire the staff, have them arrested. I think about 30 people or so were arrested at Berkeley. Bernstein, award-winning journalist, was arrested. It was captured on air because it was happening while the news was going on. There was really no reason to do this, but as I said, they're following other designs. Berkeley was speaking out against some of the producers anyway were speaking out against the direction that the National Board was taking, the decisions, some of the illegal decisions that they were making, and it seems that the National Board didn't like that and began to come in and try and clean house. So essentially, that's basically what happened. Of course, there are other details, but that's basically what happened. They began to hire security guards. They wound up hiring a public relations firm so that they could explain away all of this, and they charged it all to the local, to Berkeley, to the local radio station. At WBAI right now, a similar thing is happening. A surveillance system, which is going to cost between $30,000 and $50,000, is being installed, where there are going to be cameras all over the place, digital cameras, digital monitors, where people's movement can be followed throughout the building. Why? WBAI is right now in serious financial trouble. I don't know if it's been as serious, certainly in the last 10, 15 years, it hasn't been as serious as it is now. The listeners have rejected the programming. They've rejected what has happened at the radio station and the manner in which it happened, and they have made a decision to withhold their funds. Of course, the withholding of funds by the on-air people is being, they target just a handful of people as being responsible for the withholding of funds. But our listeners are intelligent enough to recognize that they're not going to finance what it is that they don't like. And they've made a very loud statement that they're not going to support what is happening at WBAI. So I think that is a reason enough to recognize that there is an immediate solution that can happen, and that is that the people who have been imposed by Pacifica, that they, it would probably be a good thing if they were to leave. We need to have this situation reversed. Pacifica needs to send to all of the radio stations a declaration that they will not interfere into the internal operations of the station again, unless they follow, unless they're following the established procedure. I can't see any other way out. I can't see how this can stand. It happened, as I said, illegally, and we have seen that this on-air daily campaign of hatred and vilification is reason enough why these folks need to go.
I certainly believe people will respect the idea that there should be no attacks on the air. It is counterproductive, it's bad radio, and also it's not fair. And I would hope that from this day forward that people refrain from making any statement about someone who's no longer there. It is only going to cause reactions that are not acceptable for a healing process. Also, I found that so often people are attacking each other without ever having spoken with each other. On both sides, by the way, Bernard. Mm-hmm. This has happened. I've spoken with board members. In fact, I spoke with one board member, and this is, I'll go on the record with this one because I think this is rather a unique situation. You mentioned her name, and since you mentioned her name, I'll bring it up a little bit. You were talking about Andrea. Mm-hmm. And Andrea, I spent a long time looking into her background. Now, do you have anything, any hard data that you could share with us that would justify the attacks against her that have been absolutely merciless, including she's been attacked by a blackmail and harassed and her phone's jammed and people trying to get the people that she does business with to stop doing business with her, threatening her livelihood? Do you have any evidence that she deserves this? And if so, please present that evidence at this time.
Well, I don't know if she deserves that, but I do know that she was a member of the local advisory board. And when the vote was taken on the national board, the local advisory board asked her and Frank Milspaugh, who has since resigned, to vote against severing that relationship. And Andrea Sisco decided that she would go along with the majority and vote to sever that relationship. So the local advisory board immediately sent out a letter that she be removed from the national board for not, for their reasons. And she did not remove herself. In addition to that, from what I understand, I don't have the facts in front of me, but she has voted with that majority since she has become a part of the national board.
Have you spoken to her about the nature of her votes or why?
Yes.
And what has she told you about why she's voted for these issues?
Well, she told me that, I talked to her about just last week, as a matter of fact, about why she voted for, to sever that relationship. And she told me that it wasn't just her, that it was the majority of board members.
But what
that
reason?
Everybody, that it was a unanimous vote. So it
based upon what?
Why was it unanimous?
No. What was the rationale? There's a reason why people do things, and I'm interested in the reason.
Oh, I never got her reason for it. She just
She's an African-American woman with a PhD who has spent her entire professional career helping minorities, women in the workplace. I without her knowing it, without ever talking with her, I interviewed dozens of people who had worked with her or on projects, and she was the one who, in 1996, took it upon herself at her own time
to do a listener survey. I remember it.
And, no one did anything with it. After all that effort, the station management decided not to bother with it, which was unfortunate. And I have to ask, if someone has spent so much time and effort trying to work as a volunteer, and let us remember something, every one of those board members, whether they're more conservative or progressive or liberal or radical, no matter what, they're all there as volunteers. There's no personal financial enrichment. That's not why they're there.
Well, Gary, I'm not sure, because there's been a move. Oh, by the way, there's one other thing I wanted to mention that you mentioned earlier. John Murdoch has been on the air. In fact, he was on the air with Juan Gonzalez during a Democracy Now.
But you know why he was on the air? He had been attacked and no one had spoken with him. The people who had attacked him had never called him and personally spoke with him. I verify that independently of all people. So I've got to ask a question here. If I were being attacked constantly in every possible medium as being a corporate shill just trying to sell the stations, and no one ever called me and asked for any, what's my opinion, what's my proof, why did I say something, why did I write something, I'd be concerned.
Well, I know some people that called John Murdoch.
Not the people who attacked him, not the people on the air. I verified that.
No. I don't know. Is it an attack when you raise where a person works and what that job does? Is that an attack? I think people were describing the work, the daily work of some of these board members, and I don't see that's always an attack. He works for...
Well, it depends upon the context in which you're using it. If you're saying that because someone is associated with a business that does business with other people who are corporations, and if that's the basis of saying that they're a corporate raider, look very carefully, because some of those people who've been attacked are supposed to be the corporate pawns, are struggling little business people. And that's part of the ideological drift that we have here, is do we have room? Is it possible to have room for people who are both successful and professional, and those who are, let's say, more socialist or whatever, and who have a different philosophy concerning economics?
Well, let me ask you this. John Murdoch is on the governance committee. He heads up the governance committee. And he has put forth some bylaw changes. These bylaw changes, if they are passed, will allow the board members to personally benefit from the sale of the radio stations.
Hal, I've asked for that documentation. Have you seen the actual documentation on that?
Yes, in fact, it's up on the web.
I've seen what's on the web, and I have challenged John Murdoch on that. Have you spoken with John Murdoch on that?
No, I haven't. But what I was saying, in saying that, I'm saying that here is an indication of the mindset. The whole idea that someone would put forth that a Pacifica director be, and his family or her family, be personally compensated for the sale of a radio station becomes an incentive to sell the radio station. We're talking about in this New York market that BAI could go for like $200 million. If you just got 2% of that, 5% of that, that's a lot of money.
That's not what I understood that to be. And again, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be having John Murdoch on, so he'll have a chance to explain his position, because I ask him the same questions. And but I don't feel that it's right for me to be giving his point of view. He again, the nice thing about this forum we're doing, we can raise these questions, which are important and should be raised. They're legitimate questions, Bernard. I absolutely agree with you. And then when I ask him, how would they benefit and who would benefit? And was there really an honest effort to sell the stations? I will tell you just one little as just one little note here, because when I and a little background, people. By the way, for those of you who are just joining us, I'm Gary Knoll, and we're up to the end of our first hour, and we're going to take just a brief station identification. And we're going to come right back. Bernard White's on the phone, and we'll be continuing this forum in just 30 to 40 seconds. Please stay with us.
We'll be coming back to this special report by Gary Knoll. Along with him is Bernard White. And at the conclusion of this next portion, which will be another 15 minutes or so, we will bring you the a truncated edition of The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. This is 99.5 FM WBAI.
Everyone, I'm Gary Knoll, and Bernard White's on the line, and we're talking about the problems and the potential solutions to the conflicts at BAI and Pacifica, and we're really interested in solutions, but you can't get the solutions if you don't know what all the problems are and where people's concerns are. When I was on the road, I heard, because I wasn't in New York when all this occurred, I got frantic calls, and the calls said the coup had occurred at the station. The national board, led by Bessie Walsh and Utrecht Lee, to come in and had taken over. Massive firings were going on. They were trying to sell the stations to make a lot of money and for themselves, and that they had been virtually compromised by outside corporate interest. And then over the next couple weeks, a lot more of that kind of information came. So what I did was I simply started looking into each of the allegations. And the very first allegation I looked into is, well, the Pacifica Foundation is a nonprofit foundation, and its mission is not to be selling stations. What was the actual hard evidence? And indeed, there was a memo. And the memo suggested selling BAI and KPFKA. And I looked at it, and then I spoke with the person who wrote the memo, and I asked him, because it's very important here to understand context. If you don't understand context, you're going to be lost, and you can misdirect a whole effort. And I asked, I said, did you write the memo? Yes. Why? Here is what I was told. Let me just go to some of my research notes here, so I quote verbatim, and I like to be very accurate, so I keep detailed records of all the notes that I am in my investigation. And the person was open, didn't hide anything, and I got independent corroboration. And the key in all of my investigation is independent corroboration of the statements made by by individuals. By the way, I want to thank Armand DeMille for allowing us to use this time, and I will be more than happy to reciprocate on some future date if he would like to use my time as well for his program. All right, let me just check my notes here, catch his note. And I have, let me just see here. I wasn't planning on quoting him. Michael Palmer is the gentleman, board member at that time. He's since resigned. He said, Gary, in 1996, we were looking at a five-year plan, the big picture, and we had a big meeting in San Francisco with the idea of bringing all the people together, and there were a lot of people, station managers, program directors, individual producers, and everybody was asked, make your wish list. And the wish list was, all right, what do you want? Well, everybody wanted more salary, everybody wanted more technical gear, and they wanted to be better facilities, they wanted more staff, they wanted more technicians, more producers, they even wanted more programming. And so he said, I took a look at all this, and I looked at our books, and I said, well, nice, but we don't have any money to finance this. So I thought, what a great idea, we would swap signals. Now, swapping a signal means that you take BAI from 99.5 FM, you sell that signal for whatever you can get, and it might be $50, $70, $80 million, whatever you can get for, $100 million, and then you buy another signal further down on the line. You still keep BAI. It's still there. The difference is that now you have this pot of money. You then apportion to the producers, staff, better facilities, advertising, promotion, in effect, try to take the station forward, even looking at buying other stations, non-commercial stations, in the Midwest where we're not heard, and in the Mid-South where we're not heard, and the Pacific Northwest where we're not heard. They were looking in Seattle. They were looking in some areas in the Chicago area where they felt that Pacifica should also have stations, as they do the current five. He said our entire intent was not to sell BAI. It was not to downsize. It was not to change the mission. It was to create better pay, better facilities, better support for the local stations, for all that. He said, in summer of 95 in Berkeley, programs, program directors were all begging for money. Pacifica was in tight financial conditions. Almost all the stations were in the red. Only one station was not. That was the Houston station. And for a period of time, the KPFA, but BAI was down at the bottom of the barrel. And I felt this would be very positive. In fact, a lot of people told me it was very positive. Oh, and by the way, one of the leading currently dissidents this time, at that time, was suggesting the same thing to me. And it's kind of interesting because he hasn't spoken up yet on this issue, but he said, well, one way that BAI could get out of its mess, so it doesn't have to raise all this funds and go on the air all the time, is just to have a larger working budget. It's like Channel 13 doesn't have to go on the air for fundraising. They have a $150 million a year budget. Only $5 million comes through their fund drives. They have an enormous endowment. So whether they ever did a fundraising or not really wouldn't affect the financial outcome or the structure of the programming at all. Where other stations, they live and die by their fundraising. Trust me, I go around the station. I give, so people understand, I give my show free. I pay my own airfare and hotel. I make no money. I get nothing from it at all. Contrary to what people think, I don't make money from the premiums sold on the air. If anything, I've actually paid to have premiums out of my pocket sent to the station because I had no money. So that's the wrong notion. Talk about being factually off base, big time. In any case, he said, so we just wanted to put the stations in a better position. He said, I thought I was doing something good. I was taking their wish list and just show them a way to make that wish list happen. I didn't have any idea there'd be this backlash. He said, have I learned a lesson? And you know what this lesson's taught me, Gary? Don't ever be that loose and open with your language, because someone will use a noose to hang you with it. He said, and have they ever tried to hang me with that? And he said that the financial documents show that no money to do with any of these. So I suggested just sweeping the signals and so they could have what they wanted. And the dialogue has to be something other than crafted and self-serving and self-interested. Communication is about dialogue, and that's what needs to happen. So I got, again, it makes a big difference when you speak with someone, whether you agree or disagree. Ask a person, in what context did you say something before you judge them? Mm-hmm. Ask them. And then you can agree with them or you can disagree with them. But when I look at what he said, and I realize that if I, mind you, and you clearly are fully aware of what Aesop said in The Mule, that every truth has two sides. It is well to look at both before we commit ourselves to either. And I'm hoping that one of the things we can do is start to actually sit down with everyone and ask people before you attack them or they attack you, or before you defend yourself or you challenge them, ask them, what are solutions based upon your input? Well, Michael Palmer, in effect, was giving what he considered a positive solution. Now,
okay. But
we can say yes or no to it, but by taking that and extending it to mean that he was only there to line his own pockets and he is a multinationalist, he's a real estate broker. He's not a millionaire. And I did a lot of background checking on these people who are called, you know, one guy was supposed to be on the board of Citibank. He's only a low-level employee. Volunteered his time. He's been a subscriber to BAI and a big believer. A lot of this has been blown in out of context into self-serving interest, and we got to get away from that if we want to heal.
Okay. Let me say a little something about Michael Palmer from someone who's worked directly with him and had conversations with him. First of all, his firm, C.B. Richard Ellis, is one of the largest commercial real estate firms. And what they do is they try and negotiate cheap sites for rentals in Mexico for maquiladoras, which are sweatshops. And just hold that to the side for a minute. The other thing is that in 1996, this five-year plan didn't come out of the people who work at the various radio stations. This five-year plan came out of the mind of Pat Scott as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, something that we haven't talked about, that has their fingers in this pie, too. And had they sat down with staff people around, because, see, I asked Bessie Walsh on several occasions that we need to have a national conference. We need to have a national conference so we can sit down. I think that the genius to bring Pacifica into a stronger state, considering that we're moving into another, you know, a new millennium here, that we need to sit down and assess where we are and come up with ideas about where we can go, where we want to go, and how we can go about getting there. This was, of course, rejected because it is not about including people in making the decisions. It's about narrowing the decision-making body into smaller and smaller groups. You mentioned WNET, Channel 13. Now, yes, Channel 13 has the money that they need to operate. They can pay people large salaries. But at what cost? A lot of that money, a lot of that underwriting comes from oil companies. It comes from the energy industry, which means that they do nothing, they do no investigative reporting about oil and what is happening around the world in underdeveloped countries, how the people are dying as a result of the extraction, the malicious extraction of oil out of the ground. They do no coverage of the nuclear industry, which is causing deaths all around the world, and how it feeds into the military-industrial complex.
Okay, but Bernard, that's getting off on bashing Channel 13.
No, I'm not bashing them. I'm saying
Channel 13 does a lot of good programming, too. And
no question about it.
And,
no,
again, we're not here to attack 13.
I'm not trying to attack them. I'm saying...
Let's stick with the solutions.
Okay, but you mentioned Channel 13, and I think it's important.
I mentioned only in the context that they are self-sustaining and don't have to rely upon contributions, and BAI and its stations do.
Okay, and all I'm saying is that there's a cost of traveling the road that they're traveling. and the cost comes in with what you can and cannot do on the air.
Yes and no, because if you use Channel 13 as a model of what can and cannot be done, I'll show you PBS stations that I'm on, like in Detroit, Atlanta, in Miami, in Huntington, Los Angeles. I've been on all of them, who do those kind of programmings and have walked that line between contributions and otherwise. It's not as if 13 is the bastion of integrity on these issues, nor are they the pure villain. And you are right. You have to be very careful where you get your money so it doesn't compromise your principles. You have to.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that. Bernard, I want to summarize here because we do have another person coming up. I'd like for you to give us now your summary of what you see a healing potential to be. What would you tell us in your solutions?
Well, I think we have to have the actions of Pacifica reversed. I think that those are the actions that have launched us into where we are right now, that it means that they would have to go back to December 21st, and that we would then, the radio station, the people at the station, as well as the local advisory board, which is now moving to toward elections and will be even more reflective of the listeners who will, you know, folks who listen to the radio station, that we turn internally and begin to address our problems. That we don't need Pacifica to come into WBAI to take away our autonomy, because, see, unless it is reversed, this precedent will stand, and that means that they can do it at any point in the future. So it means that we might have someone there who we really, is really doing a good job, and they'll come in for whatever reasons they have and extract them from. I was never told, Sharan Harper was not told, why we were terminated. We were just terminated. To my mind, that was a violent act. I didn't do anything wrong. As a matter of fact, if you look at the objective criteria, it seems like we were doing a lot of things right. That, the amount of money that was coming in, the increase in the listenership, the increase in community activities and outreach. We had set up a program with the Manhattan Neighborhood Network where we would then have access to over half a million listeners. So, in order for this to be healed, and it may be a hard pill to swallow, I think that all of this has to be reversed. The people, the person who is now the interim station manager has to remove herself, or has to be removed by Pacifica from WBAI. That it is absolutely necessary. The listeners have made their statement. They're rejecting what's going on at WBAI. They're not supporting it. I think the programming has gotten very, in a lot of instances, has gotten very bad. And it's not worthy of support. And, anyone who would be a party to jeopardizing the integrity of this radio station needs to remove themselves from the radio station. We've seen censorship take place, censorship in the newsroom. Folks are threatened that they cannot say certain things. The theme song from Wake Up Call cannot be played on the air. Certain people cannot come in or be a party to on-air conversations. It's all of that has to be reversed. That surveillance equipment needs to be taken out of the radio station. The relationship between the FBI and the New York City intelligence has to be severed. We never had such a cozy relationship with the FBI and the New York City intelligence before December the 22nd. So I think all of those things have to be reversed in order for there to be some kind of healing.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing these insights with us. And this is part of what we want to do. I believe that we have to have all ideas put on the table. Sort through them and see what makes sense.
Well, I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I haven't had that opportunity on the air. during a peak listening period. So I do appreciate it.
Well, this is always a forum that's open to you, Bernard.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
That's Bernard White, and he was the former program director. I'm Gary Knoll. I want now to go to our other panelist who's been standing by, and that is to show you a different perspective of the problem and different perspective on solutions. Solutions must come from all sides. The problem must be understood from all sides. That's why I took the opportunity to at least give you what I had received as the feedback in an in-depth interview with Michael Palmer before. And mind you, I don't go in and attack someone. I have to ask them. I have to, in all fairness, I must ask everyone, what's your point of view? What's your context? What's your perspective? Then we can decide whether or not it's reasonable or unreasonable, tenable or untenable. Bessie Walsh is the executive director at Pacifica. She is the one who is responsible for the hiring of producers at the station. Excuse me, not producers, the general manager at the station. And she has been at the forefront of this firestorm. In fact, she's been the firewall of the firestorm. Let's say hello to Bessie Walsh. Hi, Bessie.
Hi, Gary. Gary, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Hi.
Thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. I'm sure the audience does as well. First, I always give an opportunity for people to make any opening statements they wish to give their perspective on the current crisis before we get into the solutions. So if you would please take this opportunity to evolve your thoughts so we can understand from your point of view what happened. And I'm particularly interested in your perspective of the events leading up to the changeover from the December 22nd evening, what happened before that? All right?
Okay. First off, you know, I just want to begin to say that, you know, I've agreed to be on your show because you asked, you personally asked me, and I have a lot of respect for you. But make no bones about this. Now, this is all just a big lie, and it's being perpetrated by a bunch of zealots. And I make no apologies for trying to upgrade programming, technology, or personnel at any of the five stations. I also make no apologies for trying to expand the network. So if you want to begin there and you want to ask me any questions, I'd be more than willing to answer them.
Okay. I believe it's constructive to understand if there have been multiple allegations that the removing of Ms. Sisler, who I invited, by the way, for comment, and she declined. By the way, the invitation is certainly open at any time that Valerie Venister would like to use the forum that we have to come on to share her point of view. She is certainly welcome to do so. Because a lot of this involves her. And was there any effort on the foundation's part to take over, change the programming, fire people at BAI, or was this simply a matter of replacing a station manager?
It's a matter of replacing a station manager. It was a simple decision made, you know, because of progressive disciplinary action. And with, you know, the foundation, as with any employer, cannot discuss disciplinary actions or any kind of personnel decisions.
I would not violate that privilege, either for Ms. Van Isler's benefit or for yours. I respect that. I'm more interested in the specifics, such as, was Ms. Isler notified prior to December that she was being terminated?
Yes.
How much sooner?
I'm in the month of November. I had a conversation with her. She was offered another position within the foundation, which she did not want.
What position was she offered?
She was offered the position of executive producer for national programming.
In New York or Washington?
In Washington.
Okay. At taking a pay cut, same pay or pay raise?
A pay raise.
All right. I am assuming then that she rejected it?
Yes, she did.
Okay. Why?
She just simply rejected it.
Okay, now, she have been on some form of disciplinary a protocol that you have?
Yes.
And
I really don't want to get
I won't go into that. I will not violate. I'm not stepping there. I'm just trying to get a sequence of events. When was she notified that she was, she had to, you know, shape up?
In the summer.
Okay. So from the summer until November, I'm assuming that you were evaluating the whatever you had had her doing.
And, that is correct.
Okay, and then you decided that you wanted a new manager. But you didn't want to fire her. Why didn't you want to fire her?
Out of respect, out of the commitment that she'd had for the foundation, the time and effort that she put into it. And she did do a lot of work at WBAI. But the direction that the station needed to go in, she just wasn't willing to take it.
Okay. So I don't want to quote you out of context. If I do so, please challenge me on it. I want to make sure I understand the right context here. Are you suggesting then that you had a station manager who was not doing the type of work or taking the station in the direction that you felt was in the best interest of the station? You had warned her as she did not meet the criteria that you required. You decided to replace her, but instead of just firing her, because of the respect you had for her commitment to WBAI, and because of her tireless efforts on behalf of BAI, you decide to actually give her a raise and give her a position that you felt would be better suited for her qualities.
That's correct. And as you know, with any foundation, any organization, you know, management has the authority to make management changes. This was simply a management change.
So it had nothing to do with Bernard White?
Absolutely nothing.
And had you communicated with Mr. White?
With whom?
Bernard.
Yes.
Okay. So Bernard knew what you were doing and why you were doing it with Valerie?
When, after Valerie had shared with Bernard the fact that she was asked to either take a promotion or to step down from her position, yes, I sat and met with Bernard. I talked with him on the telephone. I came into town. I was in town for several weeks, on and off, trying to be there to accommodate the various meetings that Bernard was supposed to be setting up.
So you had asked Bernard to set up meetings?
No, he told me he was setting up meetings, and there were people that he felt that I should talk to. As a matter of fact, I even came into the station at one point and met with the staff members and the volunteers that were there at that time. And then I offered to meet with them individually. As a matter of fact, my assistant gave out her personal cell phone number and told them if they wanted to talk with me in small groups, they were certainly welcome to give her a call and that I would meet with them. I will tell you that I do have a concern about the vocal minority and some of their tactics, so that we did ask to only meet with people in small groups.
Okay. So, in other words, you wanted to meet, you wanted to share why you were making the change mm-hmm. with the other staff and department heads.
I did meet, like I said, I did meet with the staff at one point in time. I offered to meet with all of the department heads. I offered to meet with them on a department-by-department basis, which I was told was pretty difficult because a lot of departments have a lot of different volunteers that come in at different times. So then I offered to meet with people in small groups.
So you made yourself available to share your concerns and where the station was going, et cetera.
Absolutely. Not only that, there is a 5-year operational plan that's available at the front desk for anybody to read.
Did any of the local people have any input from the local stations in that 5-year operating plan?
The 5-year operating plan is an overview of the direction that I would like to take the foundation in the next 5 years. Within that, each station manager has a responsibility to put together a specific plan for their station on how to move that station forward. And we talked about things like paying people better wages. We talked about things. It talked about better benefits. It talked about basic minimal standards and as far as the technical capabilities of each station. It talks about reinvesting back into the infrastructure of the foundation and its 5 stations.
When you, excuse me, when you met with the staff in your first meeting, the larger staff,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about the interim station manager, did you choose to bring someone from inside the station or outside the station?
My choice was always to try to bring somebody from inside the station. And I will say that even though I think Utrice Lead is doing a fantastic job, she was not my first choice. Jose Santiago was my first choice. And as I understand what happened to him after I left the room, he was basically threatened bodily harm. And I wasn't there, but that was my understanding, that he was threatened with bodily harm if he was to take that job.
And how long from the time that you offered Jose Santiago, who was news director at that time, correct?
Yes.
From what that time occurred till he said no, how long was that?
From the meeting?
Yes.
Within hours. I mean, he called me back later that evening.
Okay. I interviewed Jose Santiago. Let me share his statements on this, all right?
Okay.
And I'm quoting verbatim, and by the way, anytime I do an interview, I always ask the person after I've taken my notes, I read back the notes and say, is this an accurate representation of what you've said? If not, I'll change it to make sure. I only want to quote people accurately.
Okay.
And he has approved this. He said, in September of year 2000, I was offered the news director job at Pacifica. However, it required moving to Washington, D.C., and I felt that I could do a better job in New York, and I actually wanted to see the Pacifica News Division out of New York.
I've always been impressed with him. I really wanted him at the national level. You're right.
So he said that he turned down the job because he didn't want to move to Washington, but had hoped in time to get that back up to New York. Anyhow, he received a call. He says, I received a call from Betsy late November to meet with her, and there were two people at the meeting. And by the way, I've independently verified all things with these other people. I always try to get independent verifications. And he said, I was told that Valerie was leaving at the end of the month, or excuse me, the end of the year, meaning December 31st she was leaving. And would I be interested in taking over that position? I said I would only take over that position if the following criteria were met and guaranteed in writing. One, no other staff changes. Just the station manager. Two, no other layoffs. Three, no programming changes. Four, Pacifica could not force any changes upon me or the station BAI. Five, only WBAI staff could make internal changes. Six, Pacifica and Betsy Walsh agreed BAI would remain independent and carrying forward its own mission at the local level and doing everything necessary from our own internal controls and our local advisory board and volunteer and unpaid staff. Jose told the staff this. He said, Gary, Valerie had told the staff she was being squeezed out because she had defended people who were being challenged and had something about Fidel Castro on BAI. And he said, at that time, Gary, my father just came in from Puerto Rico, and he was deathly ill, and he was rushed to the emergency room. This was on a Thursday, and I had to be with my father. For 4 days, outside of one meeting, I was not in the station. And the only meeting I was at is when Betsy talked with the group, and then as she was leaving the room, he stood up and said, I want to explain, I'm going to be, you know, I've been nominated to be the new station manager, and I want to get your feedback and see if I have your support. He said, quote, Bernard said he would refuse to work with anyone selected by Pacifica, and that precipitated a fast spreading movement where others refused to cooperate. The ball was rolling, Gary, with no way to retrieve it. I tried, but there was nothing I could do to talk any of them out of it. I did have people in the room, staff, paid and unpaid, who supported that I would be a good station selection. I was from inside. I had no political agenda. I had no personal agenda. I didn't have any, you know, special interest groups. I was not a part of anyone's clique. I just wanted to see the station survive. And so I thought that, you know, I could at least bring some reasonableness to everything. But it's rather ironic. So many of these very same people in this room who had called for the general managers being replaced for years was now... rallying around. And because, and I believe, Gary, this is what he is saying. He said, I believe because they wanted to save their own little power cliques. And the station at the time had several power cliques. And maybe they thought that they wouldn't be able to get away with what they've gotten away with in the past. There's a lot of unaccountability. There was no single professional standard. For example, people could come in and use the telephones. All the time people were using telephones. And you go over and talk with these people and say, what are you using the phone for? And they just look at you. These are strangers using BAI's personal assets for their own need. Faxes. People were using other people's computers. People could walk out at any time. The front door had no working lock, which is rather ironic because when they said to change the locks, change what lock? It didn't work. There was no security system. None. And also, a lot of the things going on in the air were simply not objective. Now, it's not that I would have had a chance to change everything, but at least I would have seen that a lot of this stuff was brought to a screeching halt. And instead of having any opportunity to help the station, they began an endless campaign of harassment against me. Personal and physical intimidation, threats, and I was constantly harangued. At the very time, in this angry and hostile environment, I felt overwhelmed, and finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. My dad was dying in the hospital. I was taking care of my blind grandmother, and I just said, I can't do it. This is not how I can live my life at this time. And so I declined the offer. Now, is that from your understanding now, that's exactly what he told me and independently confirmed. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that? Is that correct or not? Did he ask you these statements?
I think it's fair. It's a fair assessment. I mean, you know, two people sitting in a room and they come out and two people will tell you two different things. But that's probably pretty close to what I would say. But I think this just gives you some sort of flavor for the kind of tactics that these people are willing to go through and to use simply to get their way, simply because a decision was made that they didn't quite favor. And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent management does have the right to manage. I had to make a decision regarding the management of the station for the good of the station.
Were you firing people at other stations?
No. First, and I think, in all fairness, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, this was part of a progressive disciplinary action. All right? And okay. I assess each manager different based on a set of goals and whatnot that we've both sat down and put together for the station and the manager themselves. So a decision was made based on whether or not these were going to be met.
So you had not gone on a purge around other stations?
Of course not.
All right. Had you fired other station managers?
No, I have not.
Okay. Want to try to keep things in perspective. Now,
Gary, bottom line is I only took measures that were in the best interest of the radio station and of the staff of that station. And he is absolutely right. I mean, you know, the things that he asked me for is nothing more than I'm doing at any of the stations. The stations are run by the station managers. I, as executive director, have the responsibility to hire and fire the general managers. I do not come in and tell them how to run the stations on a day-to-day basis. That responsibility has been delegated down to them.
Did you do so illegally?
Of course not. How is it illegal to decide, you know, that this manager is not going to make her goals? She has no intention of trying to make some of those goals. And so, therefore, I had to make a change. You know, I have the authority, as I said, to hire and fire the managers at the station.
So, in other words, you may advise the community station board, but you're not beholden to it.
The community advisory boards are exactly what, you know, it says they are by law. They're advisory in nature. By law, they have nothing to do with the day-to-day operations of the radio station. That's
okay.
By law.
All right.
All right. The
now,
governance board has policy setting, whatever, over the foundation itself. They set the policies. I follow the policies.
He refused, because of the pressure and harassment against him, Jose Santiago, to take the manager position. How did you select Utrecht Lead?
Actually, what I had done, as I was doing research and trying to decide who I was going to put in as manager, I had a list of people that I thought would make a good manager. All right. So I was really disappointed when Jose called me back and said that he would not be able to take on the position, because as I'd done the research, I really felt that he was the best candidate. But that being said, the next person that was on my list was Eutrice Lee. I had a concern, however, because of what Jose said happened to him, whether or not that would be in her best interest, because she is a female. And if, you know, somebody's threatening to attack a man, I had a concern with what they would do to a female. So, you know, I called her up and I, you know, we sat down and we had a very frank conversation. And I told her what I'd heard that happened to Jose. I told her that regardless of whether or not she took the position or not, there was going to be a management change at WBAI. I said I would prefer it to be from somebody that's on the inside because they know the station. And I felt that, you know, they would have a commitment that would carry the station properly, you know, forward faster than me bringing somebody in from the outside, which I felt would be met with a lot more resistance. And we had this conversation, and she says, well, let me think about it. And she thought about it. And then she gave me a call, and she basically asked me some of the same things that Jose said. You know, was the day-to-day operations of the station going to be her responsibility? I said, yes. She said, was I going to have, you know, talk to her about anything about their programming? I said, no. You know, any other staff changes? I told her that those would be her decisions once she became station manager. So then she said, well, you know, based on that, you know, I'll do it.
What happened that caused the locks to be changed at that on the night of the 22nd? Tell us from your perspective what led to that.
I had a concern about the security of the station's assets and, to tell you the truth, the well-being of the staff after what happened with Jose and after hearing that there was, you know, there were people planning to take over the station physically. I had a concern. I sat down with Eutrice and I said, well, okay, you know, I told you that I wasn't going to interfere with the operations of the station. And I said, but I do have a concern about the security of the space given, you know, some of the conversations I've heard over the air.
What conversations were you hearing?
Well, that they were recommending that people come in, basically, and, you know, take over the station. I, you know, have an obligation to protect the staff and the assets of this foundation, and one of those is WBAI. So I did what I had to do. I talked to the person that was going to be station manager, made sure that she had no objections. I asked her when would be the time that would be the least obstructive to the operations of the station. We chose a time. And, you know, like we came in there and we just supervised the fact that the locks were changed. But primarily to let the staff know that they had my permission to do it and to let the building know that these people changing the locks had my full permission to do so and why.
What would have happened? What would have been the worst case scenario, for example, if they had have taken over and had sit-ins in all the offices or in the control room and did an all-day, all-night seminar? What would have been the problem?
First off, you have fire codes that would have been violated. People's safety would have been violated. FCC issues. You know, we have to have control of our own air by law. So, I mean, those are the kinds of issues that I was facing that I had to make a decision on. And I felt, you know, the least obstructive way to do it was to simply, you know, secure the station and change the locks.
Now, since that's all right, so let's just put it in this light and tell me if you feel this is accurate or not accurate. You made a decision to change the management. Mm-hmm. You felt that there was a hostile environment that may jeopardize the airwaves or the security of the staff or station, so you changed some locks.
Yes.
Is that so unusual what anyone else in any other business in America would do if they have let someone go and are concerned about their security?
I think that's sort of normal practice.
All right. What about the shifting gears for a moment here? The corporation, the Pacifica, They have a policy. Is there any policy to sell any of the stations?
No.
Any effort to sell any of the stations?
No.
Have they put it in writing that they will not sell the stations?
I don't know if they put it in writing. I know that it was a board statement was made that the board was not interested in selling any of the stations.
Okay.
And so that's probably in writing because it's part of the minutes.
Yeah, I have those minutes.
Okay.
All right. So from your perspective, there is no effort to sell any of the BAI
assets.
Absolutely not. Was there an effort to try to expand the BAI assets, to actually purchase other community stations to continue the community?
Well, you know, BIA is not an entity. If you want to know if there's an effort or if I have plans or I would like to see, if the board would like to see the foundation expanded, the answer is yes.
So, in other words, you'd like to see more stations like BAI around the country?
Excuse me, Gary, I'm sorry.
You would like to see more stations like WBAI around the country?
Absolutely. I mean, especially in the Midwest. I would like to see us have at least two or three stations in the Midwest. I'd like to see us have a station in the South and a station in the Northwest. Yeah. But primarily right now, my immediate goal was to try to at least get two stations in the Midwest. And there was a station in Florida. You know, I've had to focus so much on this that I haven't been able to go out and try to raise money to buy those stations that we need to buy. But the answer is yes, I'd like to expand the network and certainly not to sell off anything. We have no plans whatsoever to sell any stations within this foundation. We're the only entity of our kind. We own 5 public radio stations in 5 major markets. That's influence, all right? And that is not for sale.
Has there been an effort that you're aware of to change the original mission of Blue Hill?
No.
How are the board members selected? Is it a democratic process or is it an old boy process? How's it work?
Well, anybody can nominate someone to the board. And then that nomination goes to the governance committee. And then from the governance committee, the people either nominate it out to the full board or not. They interview candidates, and then they're nominated. There's a vote, and then they're nominated to the full board.
Okay. Now, from what you see now, in retrospect of what has happened, what would you have liked to have seen changed or done differently in the changeover at WBAI?
That's a difficult question. Because, again, I wanted to do it in the least disruptive way possible. I made every effort to do it. I don't see how I could have done anything differently. With you just asking me off the cuff like that, I don't see how I could have done anything differently.
What about the station having the security system?
Well, you know, again, I've done what I think is the best for the station itself. When you talk about what about the station having a security system, how many offices and businesses don't? I've had staff members that were attacked. It is my job to protect the staff of these stations as well as its assets. And I take that very seriously. A member of my staff was physically attacked in the station.
Was that the fellow's punch in the mouth?
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Then I had, people are being attacked by a small, violent group of individuals who are upset because whatever decisions are made, they don't like. And since they don't like them, they have launched personal attacks. They have blackmailed people. They have threatened people. And I have to protect these people.
Okay, I think we should make it very clear that those attacks have not occurred based upon any of the legitimate proponents for change or challenge.
I'm not saying who is doing it, but
I understand.
But there's an element of the dissidents that are violent and volatile.
All right.
And I haven't heard the group as a whole condemn them. I get death threats. I haven't heard anybody condemn that. I certainly haven't heard them step up front and tell them to stop and that this is not going to, you know, change things in their way. I haven't heard one word.
Many listeners, certainly my listeners, and I'm sure other listeners as well, want to be a part of the process in selecting board members. And how can they go about being a part of this process?
Well, I can tell you that in the fall, the chair of the governance committee, was John Murdoch, said for the record that we were going to be holding board nominations. And those, you know, the request for resumes was accepted through the end of November. That announcement was put on the air of all five stations. And anyone could have submitted a resume that would have been considered by the governance committee and therefore the board.
All right. So, Houston, doesn't Houston have input? By the way, I want to go just for a moment to Houston.
Okay.
There have been some challenges that the Houston station no longer serves the local community, rather serving mainly a music venue to a particular type of audience out there, and a lot of the important programming that was once their hallmark is no longer on the air.
Yeah, the way I think I can best answer that is that those programming decisions are made on the local level. They're made by the general manager and the program director of those stations. The local advisory board is there for program ascertainment. If the programming that's being provided by that station is not a viable community service, and, you know, they've got information and data to prove that, they're supposed to take that to the board. And then the board will then sit down and talk with myself and the general manager. But if you see the fact that the audience listenership is going up, the overall support of the station is going up because the revenue is going up, that we have a very high staff morale, it is hard for me to see that they're not doing a viable community service. That's what I like. I mean, I love to walk into a station and people say, "Hi, Bess, you know, everything is great." They're smiling, they're having a good time. You know, if my people can't come to work and have a good time, that's what I have a problem with, because we don't pay them enough to be miserable, quite frankly. I want them to have a good time. I want them to enjoy what they're doing. And to say that it's not doing a viable service is ridiculous. If they have a 1.3 share of their market, that means somebody's listening.
Okay, but here's a question. What if that 1.3% share is not the people who originally were supposed to be served by the foundation? You could have a 20 share.
The face of America is changing every day. Every day. And life is changing every day. All right? What I was 10 years ago, I'm not today. All right? So things change. So if that community is changing and there's a shift and there's a shift in the listenership, that's changed. And that's what that community is asking for. And that is a community radio station. And because the community is changing, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. You have a few people that, because decisions that are made are not made that they like, that they're going to decide, they're going to disrupt everything. This is a vocal minority. And I want to say this over and over again. It's a vocal minority. All right? Bernard was right about one thing. We have close to 1 million listeners. And you have a few of them, trying to disrupt and destroy this foundation and everything that we stand for. The face of America has changed. So, yes, the people that listen are probably changing too. Or they look different than they did 50 years ago.
What are your concerns about the accountability of programming on the air? Do you ever have a conversation with the station program directors or station managers about whether or not a given program is truly serving the interest that it's supposed to be serving and serving it at a level of competence and professional and accountability that should be a higher standard?
Okay. This almost takes us full circle, because you come back to the vision statement that's available at all the stations, that it talks about doing great radio. Each of the managers have a responsibility to do great radio, not good radio, great radio. That's a basic minimal standard of this foundation. So, yes, they are talked about the standards of their programming. I give them advice on a constant basis. I talk with my managers on a weekly basis. I try to visit the stations on a monthly basis, sometimes bi-monthly. I've been spending a lot of time on the East Coast, spending, you know, with New York. So some of the stations may be feeling a little neglected right now. But even if I don't visit the stations, I talk to the managers. So, yes, advice is given. Do I go in and make the decisions? The answer is no, because that's why I hired that manager, and that's why that manager is supposed to have a program director.
Let me try to put things in perspective and just kind of bring it full circle and then see if it's accurately stated or not. For those of you who are just listening, I'm concluding the first of what will be an ongoing series each Monday of bringing voices to the air from all points of view to share with you their ideas, both their ideas of the problems and their ideas of the solutions. And doing so where no one is censored, everyone has an opportunity to say what they need to say. And it'll be in a one-hour format, henceforth in the future. It would be an imposition to take 2 hours. I just needed to do it today, and I thank Armand DeVille very much for allowing that to occur. Bessie Walsh is the person who is responsible for seeing that the station managers are hired. She has the requirements to see that the right person who has the capability and professional background in managing large numbers of people. Now, to give you an idea, an average station, an average commercial station deals with about 10 really strong personalities. Their pay, the station managers can go anywhere from $200,000 to upwards of $800,000 at the big stations. An average station might have 30 different people. BAI has over 250 individuals, volunteers, producers, and full-time staff. So you have to have someone who has a professional background in management skills and dealing with people, and also keeping the motion going forward to what the original foundation was supposed to do. What is this community broadcasting station supposed to do? And can I control the station so that little cliques, power group people, do not, as they historically have done at all the stations, do this? Even on KPFK in Los Angeles, there was a time when there were some really angry people on the air there, not spewing any information that really helped or improved the listenership's interest in life. And it took a long time before they left. You have to have a good manager to be able to do that. One who's not intimidated by people that yell and scream, get up in your face, as sometimes people do. I can tell you this, from experience in both fields, a lot of behavior in non-commercial radio would be not tolerated in professional radio, and that is commercial radio. You have some who are extremely diligent. You've had remarkable human beings on the air, and they are gifts to all of us. And I commend them for the ability to handle so many situations, do so well. That's just the background. Then we have Bessie, who's saying, all right, I have
something to your statement.
Yes.
The programming changes that have been made have not been motivated by any desire, but only the desire to reach the broadest audience possible at all five radio stations. You know, I think Pacifica is still the only home of true progressive and alternative programming. I mean, we have the prison show, we have the gay, we have the gay and lesbian voices, and those are in Houston, the same station that you were asking me whether or not they had quality radio. Of course we do. And I believe that is the goal of all of our managers. And they are growing, and they are learning, and they do need coaching. But with that being said, their only goal is to continue to give that community, this alternative community, programming that they can't get anyplace else. And I believe that we're doing that.
All right. So you decided to make a change. You came to New York City. You had explained to the program the station manager that she was going to be replaced, but you were giving her an opportunity for another job, better paying, more autonomy, and without the hassles of running a station, and allowing her to use her unique and special gifts.
Absolutely.
Of which she has.
Mm-hmm.
And respecting for the time and commitment she had given to the station. And you had selected someone inside the station, Jose Santiago, news director, who was not controversial, who would become the station manager. Outside of that, it was hands off and on to seeing the larger mission we're taking care of. That then became the basis for the station manager trying to protect her position, not wanting to leave, refusing your offer, and instead enlisting the services of other people who would then try to make this a national issue, trying to tie in the conflicts at the local, at the national level, and the contentions with the national board, as if this were just an extension of the local board, and trying to bring the two issues together. And you're suggesting they are two separate issues, and that there was no plan by the national board to use this as a basis of taking over and eliminating the democratic processes of BAI. Is that accurate or inaccurate?
That's pretty much accurate. I do want to make it clear, just in case, just for your listeners, that this was not, it was a staff decision made by me. The board is a governance board. They set and make policy. They do not make staff decisions.
So the board had nothing to do with who's
board
on the air, what they say, or anything
else?
The
executive director. And the executive director is responsible for hiring and firing the managers of the five stations.
Okay. Just need to know, so you never had any conversations with any board members about who to hire, who to fire, or to take away the power of BAI?
First, I do want to say this. I mean, when you say you never had any conversation with any board members, I mean, their responsibility also is to advise me and to talk to me and to coach me. So, yeah, I've had conversations. I mean, you don't make decisions in the tunnel. I may say, you know, I've got this situation going on. This is what I'm thinking. And I seek advice from people. And so I have sought advice from time to time from different people, and some of them have been our board members.
Okay.
But the ultimate decision was mine, and I stand by that decision. It was the best decision that could have been made, I believe, the direction of WBAI.
Bessie Walsh, I want to thank you very much for coming on and sharing your views with us. I also very much want to thank Bernard White for coming on and sharing his views with us. I consider both individuals to be responsible, intelligent, and truly seeking a stronger, better station for the future. Even though they may have different ideologies, all ideas should have value. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all very much for listening. This forum will continue with many, many other responsible voices having an opportunity to bring you their insights, and you'll have a chance to see how hopefully in time we can have a healing and resolve these conflicts. Have a nice day, everyone.